Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts, as I fix myself in my chair.
Jesus, get yourself together.
Alex Croson, along here with host number dose, Casey Clapp.
Hi, everyone. It's me, Casey.
Hello, Casey.
Well, good day, Alex.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Got all sorts of things happening all the time. So, you know, if you don't catch me doing one thing, yeah, I'm doing something else.
Right.
You know, it's the way it is. It's been a heavy, heavy last couple weeks for me, that's for sure. Got a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So
a lot of life things kind of coming down. And
a lot of life things coming down.
Raining on our psyches.
Yeah, that is. That's the case. Yeah. So it's been heavy week on the personal side, mm-hmm. and heavy week in terms of how much ice has been laden,
yes.
all over everything.
Right.
Here in Pacific, actually not even the Pacific Northwest, just specifically Portland and the Willamette Valley, the gorge here,
mm-hmm.
just decimated with ice over the last couple weeks.
It's true.
Yes, and so when one of the things that happened actually during this time is I turned in some of the section of draft for the book. I don't know what to say. Materials?
A cup of draft.
Yeah, just one cup of draft, please. That was a week ago, actually.
Yeah,
now.
Yep,
turned
that's
that
right.
In. So that's very exciting. I got, I think I over... over-delivered, which is what I was hoping to do.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah, so instead of the classic over-promise, under-deliver, I tried to promise a normal amount, but rather agree to a normal amount that they asked for, and then over-deliver.
That's a good look. Yeah. It can be a good look.
Yes, hopefully they're not like, ooh, you're moving a little bit too fast. We actually want you to redo all of this.
Sure.
So I hope they don't do that.
I think they probably will not, Casey.
Yeah, I hope not. I hope it's going to be like, yeah, this is great. Just here's some edits, and we'll move forward. But for the most part, it's great.
Yeah, you're moving at a good clip there.
I am. And in fact, both. I spent so much time going over all the birch trees that we have,
wow.
in this area, or could have in this, ooh. Area, or don't have in this area, but for some reason someone thinks we might. I did not expect to spend so much goddamn time on birch trees.
Well, if we can take anything away from that, it's that a birch episode is upcoming for sure.
You're right.
While it's fresh on Casey's mind.
Oh, that's so accurate. You're so spot on. Oh, man.
Well, Casey, yes, a lot happening in our lives, but the one constant that we can always rely on is that we are here to talk about a tree today.
Exactly. Once a week, you can depend on that.
And of course, that tree is the... And of course, we can't talk about the... until we take a break.
Well done.
So, Casey... we will be right back with our discussion on the... right after this. Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts, so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees. Get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-blooming. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again, and it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring! Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we are talking about the scientific name.
The scientific name is Falcatifolium taxoides.
Wow.
Now, you'll all have noticed that you thought you lost connectivity for a second.
This was not an audio glitch.
Multiple times. Mm-hmm. You have not done anything wrong. Stay seated. Everything's okay.
So, but buckle up, we'll say.
Please do, because this, in fact, Alex, you're going to need to buckle up too.
Wow.
I've given you little to go off of for this episode.
Yes.
I'll tell you why. initially, we had planned to do a three-part series on New Zealand trees.
That's right.
That was my initial thing. And I was like, this is going to be great. I'm going to have a good time. Then I got on to reading this book that has nothing to do with New Zealand trees.
Wow.
It's called The Vital Question. I believe it's by Nick Lane.
Nick Lane, you finished another book.
I finished this other book. I didn't like the dinosaur book, so I forced myself to finish it because I'm just, I need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Started this other book and I was like, okay, this is a heady book. It's going to be a lot. In fact, it is, it's about life in the grandest sense.
Oh, wow.
And it was, let me see, a whole other book that I read called The Tangled Tree by David Quammen has, it was an entire book that in the newest one I'm reading was completely summarized down to like the first 10 pages.
Wow.
Like a 300 some page
book. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So I'm leveling up in terms of that.
Cool.
Which is great. However, that means that I was like, okay, this is going to be a big book. So I'm sitting there, I'm reading it, and it brings up something that kind of makes me go, huh, I've never quite thought about it that way.
Wow.
And then it made me think about it more and more. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up going on a pretty significant tangent that has led us to where we are today.
Wow. Here we are.
Yes. Sorry, everyone. Everyone in New Zealand who is really stoked about that, you're just going to have to wait.
Wow. A hanging chad.
You get a hanging chad, another fish.
A chad.
A chad is a kind of fish.
Hey, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Can we focus?
Yeah. Yes. So, real funny guy.
My therapist told me I should start asking for what I want.
So I decided to go down this thing. I'll explain how it led me while we go there.
Okay.
The tree we're talking about today is not nameable.
Sure.
In English.
Now, this
or
is,
from what I can tell, other languages.
That was the big thing, because I looked at the notes for this week, because I'm a good little boy, and I saw that this episode, usually we name the episode, or usually we, in the notes, you put the name of the species that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have one.
Exactly.
And I was like, what?
Yeah, usually somebody has given it a non, like, scientific name.
And then I thought, well, that probably just means there's, like, you know, a native name for
yes,
this tree.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I asked you about that and you said, not that I can tell. And so I really don't know what to do here, Casey.
Yeah. We're talking about a tree from New Caledonia.
New Caledonia.
Which is, I'm sorry, probably New Zealanders are like, oh, come on. It's like saying someone's moving to Seattle instead of Portland, you know?
Sure.
They're kind of similar, but like just different enough. But they're both these like very isolated island chains in the Pacific. Instead of being in the southeast of Australia, New Caledonia is northeast of Australia. And there are indigenous people that had initially inhabited these islands. I think they still do. It's called the Kanaks. K-A-N-A-K.
Kanak.
As far as I know, they probably have a name for this tree. I have not necessarily been able to figure out what it is.
Wow.
It's not listed in the places where I normally would expect there to be the name. So literally the Gymnosperm database, one of my favorite websites, has all the common names in like all the languages for all the other trees. But in this case, it says common names, blank, and then moves on.
Oh, wow.
So I looked up Wikipedia. Wikipedia, it's nothing. Just says a scientific name.
Which draws from a bunch of different sources.
Exactly.
You would think maybe you would find a source.
Yes. Now, unfortunately, I have not been able to find this actual name. I'm sure I
Amazing.
Could dig it up somewhere. But this is actually kind of common in a lot of different places. There's just no common name for certain insects, for certain species of plants where there's just, it's just a normal thing. It just exists. We've given it a scientific name. We've classified it.
Yeah.
But that's it. Like no one has given too much thought otherwise.
Okay. Well, if I've learned one thing from this podcast, it is that we have a broad fan base with a broad knowledge base.
Yes.
So if you were listening to this and screaming at us, it's called this, please write to us hello@arbitrarypod.com.
Now, so I think, I personally just want to give it our own common name.
That's a lot of fun.
So the scientific name is Falcatifolium taxoides, which means it has sickle-like leaves.
Wow.
That look like taxis, that looks like you.
Okay.
So that I think is kind of fun. When you first look at it, I just see the word Falcon.
Right. That's hardcore.
It's just what it looks like. It looks like it's the Falcon leafed Taxus. So I really want to call it like the Falcon U.
The Falcon of Death.
Yeah, but it's not a U. So I don't want to like fall into the trap of being like, oh, I'm just going to call it a Falcon Pine because it kind of looks like that.
Well, I have a pitch, Casey.
Okay, what do you got?
How about during our review section of this episode, we give our golden cone score and then we give our pitch for a common name.
Well, see, Alex, what are we going to call it in the meantime then? Are we just going to call it
this tree?
Falcatifolium taxoides?
I think we should just call it this tree, this week's tree.
Wow. Okay. All right. It's just generic.
It's just the most generic tree you've ever heard of. Well, Casey, let's imagine, as we do every week, that you and I are traipsing through New Caledonia. Wow, what wonders to behold.
Ugh, beautiful.
And we come across some of this week's tree. Casey, let's ID this week's tree.
I think that sounds great. So here is the situation. It is a small tree, not too large, not too crazy. Grows to about 15 meters, which is probably about 40, 45 feet, somewhere in there. And that will be a forest tree. It grows on these kind of higher mountainous areas, and it grows in dense rainforests.
Mm.
So it's a really beautiful kind of area. And for those of you who are unfamiliar, we'll talk a little bit about New Caledonia. It's a wild place.
Wow.
It is the kind of place that has the botanical equivalent of a different world, you know?
Wow.
Like it's untouched in a way of, it's just, it's ancient. We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Meanwhile, so the only important thing to note about New Caledonia is that it has ultramafic soils.
What is that?
It essentially is a soil that has very low silicon, high iron, and high magnesium.
Okay.
So it's actually rock that is more similar to the mantle below the Earth's crust.
Whoa. This kind of reminds me of like volcanic soils. Is it similar?
Yeah, it is, but volcanic soils actually have a lot of silicon in it and other things. Like all the soil that is on the Cascades, that's all volcanic. It all comes from basalt.
Well, I take it all back.
No. You're right, because this is also volcanic origin, but it very well could be volcanic and plate tectonics that brought up rock from like such a deep ancient place. Another similar thing would be the serpentine soils in California.
Sure.
And the Siskiyous and the Calamus. And there's some other places that have these weird spots as well that are like just really weird, unique soil types.
So this could be growing in like ancient soil.
Yes, potentially. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's also just like very nutrient poor, like crazy nutrient poor to the point where anywhere else in the world, no plants would grow on it.
But for some reason,
here they do.
Wow.
So this is one of those trees that grows very predominantly on these ultramafic soils. And there are some 43, I think, species of conifers, all of which are endemic to New Caledonia, and many of which grow only on this soil type.
Oh my God.
It's like, it's hard to imagine, but it has this extraordinary soil type, and it has been isolated for something like 30 million years.
Mm.
So all of the plants have gotten there from a bird or something. Like they've all gotten there in some weird way.
Okay.
Then they start to grow. Then they start to speciate from that. So either they were brought there from somewhere else, or they speciated on that island themselves. Mm. And they've had enough time to differentiate from everything else in the world. So everything is endemic. There's like 3,000 species of endemic plants there.
Oh my God.
They grow nowhere else.
Wow.
So it's a crazy spot, botanically speaking. Now, our tree grows in this lovely section of the world. And it is in the Podocarpaceae. So it's, again, another podocarp, which is why I thought, this is going to be okay. Everyone's not going to be so mad at
me for
this.
We're still on track for the theme.
Yes.
We're doing great.
So it's a small tree, and it has, it grows, again, in these dense forests, so it's hard to see like what the whole canopy can look like, but it's not a big tree. Think of a U in a sense around here where if you leave them open, they can kind of get big and bushy, but they grow in forests, and so they kind of grow a little spindly, and they kind of like look funny here and there. They're a little bit shade tolerant, these, so you can find them in these dense forests down below, and they'll grow up through that forested area.
Cool.
And they have more or less smoothish bark. Sometimes it can exfoliate, it's a little reddish. Again, very yew-like, so the whole specific epithet being taxoides really actually like is very fitting, I think, for this tree.
And if I'm recalling, when you add oides to a scientific name, it means like this other thing.
Yes, exactly.
Like cupressoides or whatever.
Yeah, it means the leaves. It has leaves that are like that. Usually that's what oides means.
Oh, okay. Specifically the leaves, not just in general.
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Now, I say that with this kind of tentativeness because mm-hmm. if you say phyla, that's explicitly the leaves.
Yeah.
So I think this is more than just the leaves, but kind of like the whole twig, the whole kind of thing.
The foliage.
Yeah. So I think you're right. I think it is. It's more of like, yeah, this looks like a U. What part of a U? Yeah, that part. You know?
U-ish.
It's a really gorgeous little plant with this reddish bark and these dark green leaves that you can find in the interforest area. And it has two different kinds of leaves. One is the juvenile, which grows on very small little plants. And I had to figure this out because every now and then I read a bunch of stuff and I'm like, what exactly does that mean? So the juvenile leaves, as I've read, are flattened bifacially.
Bifacial.
Yes, they are two-faced leaves.
Okay.
One side is a devil, the other side is an angel.
Wow.
I'm just kidding. They're both angels. Don't get me wrong.
We couldn't say that about this week's tree.
No, we couldn't do that. What are we? We're not monsters. So it grows, I think what that means is that essentially its leaves split themselves more vertically, which is bifacially, so they have two faces, one left and one right.
Oh, instead of like horizontal, where they have a top and a bottom.
Exactly.
These have a side and another side.
I believe that's the case.
Wow.
And that...
Wild.
The reason I know this is because the adult leaves are flattened bilaterally. And so that makes the... And when I've seen pictures, they look flat, like a kind of paddle-shaped leaves. Mm-hmm. Not quite as thick as other podocarps, but more, well, like a U.
So these like grow, as they grow older, they flatten.
Exactly.
Bilaterally? Yeah.
Bilaterally. Now, it's not as the leaves grow older, it's as the plant grows older.
Oh, sure.
So kind of like a juniper, where it's when it's really young or new shoots are growing vigorously and it's worried about having some other thing eat it, it grows the awl-like sharp needles.
Yeah,
but then
yeah.
It'll grow the other scale-like leaves. This, I think, is that exact thing. So as it gets a little bit older, its leaves flatten themselves out and they start collecting more light rather than being more tight and maybe able to protect themselves a little bit more.
Interesting. We've also talked about plants trees that start out red.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
That's kind of a similar thing.
It is. Like, it's just kind of a thing to help the plant avoid certain things.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's for the redness, a lot of times that happens right when it's brand new coming out, and it actually protects the plant, the leaves, before they really get all their waxy coatings and everything in place. It protects them from, like, harsh light and UV and things like that.
In those tender first years.
Exactly, yeah. So I think you're right. It's just a different means of that kind of control over keeping themselves safe.
Interesting.
So the other thing about these leaves, Alex, is that they are, as the genus would tell you, falcatifolium.
Yeah.
Falcate means sickle shaped.
Sickle shaped.
Yeah.
And for anybody listening who doesn't know what a sickle is, because I feel like it's kind of an old school thing.
Yeah,
right?
It is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of a crescent, like a half moon.
It is. It is the blade that's on top of death's.
Yes. Staff?
Staff.
Sickle?
Oh my God, what is that? Oh, scythe.
Scythe. Yes, you. Yes.
So a scythe is basically just a pole with a handle that has a sickle blade on top mm-hmm. of it. So basically what that means in practice is that the leaves are kind of like curved a little bit. They don't exactly have perfect symmetry on the left and the right yeah. of their mid-vein. You also see this in the pecan leaflets, where they kind of curve on the bottom, but the top is more or less equal on the top. So it looks like the leaf ends up getting this kind of like crescent moon kind of shape.
I will say it's pretty subtle, Casey.
It is, right?
It's not quite as like obvious or deliberate looking as I thought it might be.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah.
I think it's a pretty, it's a gentle curve.
It is. I think that's very fair. I think that's a good way to describe it.
Now, evolutionarily, does the sickle shape have anything to do with anything?
You know, I don't think so. I think it's okay. Just how it grows.
Just how it grows,
yeah,
man.
So to speak. Because most of the time what that means is that you have a different rate of growth, just like with the cone.
Sure.
Where for whatever reason, one side grows a little bit wider than the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that that is how the leaves developed. Like the bottom side stopped growing as quickly so that the leaf would kind of bend out a little bit.
Get a little extra sun or something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. So it could just be my guess. Is that it ended up developing that way because it was getting a little bit more light in where it's shaded conditions.
Gotcha.
It's just more beneficial if the top grew a little bit faster and it ended up flattening out the whole needle or making it go flat out in a left and right kind of two rank system.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a pretty little tree, honestly. Like I really think it looks handsome. It looks like a U. Like I just cannot get it unstuck from my brain. It looks like if a U looked up at a redwood and said, I'm going to be just like you, and made its needles a little bit more redwood-like, which they're already very redwoody, and then saw a hemlock and said, yeah, but I think you got what it takes, so I'm going to look like you too. So it looks like a love child between a U, a Western hemlock, and a redwood. All come down together in our tree this week.
This week's tree. So you're saying this tree's a little derivative.
I think so.
Just grabbing, it's like Quentin Tarantino, just grabbing elements
yes.
of the things it likes to build its own aesthetic.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Casey, this is a conifer, no?
This is a conifer, Alex.
Well, let's talk about this cone.
Well, I, for probably the first time ever, I'm going to talk a little bit about the male cone.
Oh my God.
The cone that produces the pollen.
Yeah.
I was very confused when I was first looking at this, but if you look up photos and if you go to our website, you can find some. I have a thing that says some photos information on Falcatifolium taxoides. And it has some good pictures. It's actually in France, or in French, because the French annexed this island, so everything there is mostly in French. But you can click on the English, and all the information goes away, which is kind of like, it seems like a very French thing to do.
Wow.
Oh, you want it in English? Okay. They just take all the words away.
But you want me to turn the radio down? I'm just going to turn it off.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not what I asked. Okay.
It's a little manipulative.
It seems very French. No offense to our French people out there. I know we have at least one listener, and you are the best.
Yes. Or as you would say, I don't know.
Good job, Alex. I was looking through this, and it honestly, the whole plant looks like a heath, or it looks like a small rosemary or something like that. Like, it looks like you would not expect it to be a conifer.
Rosemary, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and it has these male cones that are probably about 3 to 4 inches long.
Wow.
And they look like catkins that come out from a chestnut or something like that.
Yes.
And they are this like yellowish, very creamy color, and they just pop out from the terminal or just from an axil of one of the leaves,
mm-hmm.
and then just release their pollen out to the world.
Just a little little caterpillar.
Yeah, exactly. They look like a catkin you'd find on a birch or an alder, anything in that, in the whole birch family.
More derivative.
Mm-hmm. God, and then on top of that, the seed cone.
Wow.
Have you looked that up?
More derivative.
It looks like a heath, or it looks like when it first comes out, it has this little tiny scale covered short shoot that comes out from the axil of one of the leaves, and it pops out and it looks like a little tiny flower of a heath or heather, one of those kind of little ericaceous kind of plants that just has this little tiny little teeny tiny thing just pops out and just has what it looks like, a little tiny little flower head. But that flower head, of course, is a cone. It's a little tiny cone that has a bunch of needles that are, I think there's about a dozen or so scale-like needles that do what podocarps do and become this very fleshy base of the cone.
Yeah.
Now, the cone itself is technically these scales. And then the one apical scale, the very last one, is fertile with one single seed, or rather an ovule on it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it looks comparable to the Totara.
Yeah, totally does.
And to the Remu.
Yeah.
It's in that definite, I mean, it's a pot. Is this a podocarp thing?
This case? Is. This is, okay. It's in the podocarp family. Yeah.
I mean, like, is this a podocarp thing as in, do these, is this just what podocarp cones look like?
Yes, it is. Okay. Yeah, yeah, very much so.
Cool.
They have all done this same kind of thing. It's mm-hmm. to, you know, a different degree here or there for different plants, but for the most part, that is their thing. They have all developed for the birds.
As they say. And literally.
And literally.
So if we're also, if we're talking Taxus-like, yeah. this looks like a yewberry.
It does. It does. It really has it. Now, it looks a little bit different. It looks very superficially like a yewberry.
Sure. If you were glancing at it.
Exactly.
Maybe.
You'd be like, oh, is that a yew? Oh, that's not a yew.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think, honestly, of all the podocarps I've seen, this is the one that looks the most appetizing to me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I could see like plucking the seed off the front and just popping that in my mouth.
I totally could. It looks like it looks to me like a more succulent cranberry with a huckleberry attached to it.
I think it looks like a strawberry gusher.
Okay, that's even better. Yes, that's totally it. So
you can tell how Casey and I look at food differently.
Yes. No, it looks like a quite. It looks like a Chianti berry. Yes.
I'm like, oh, it looks like candy.
Yeah. You know, everyone sees their own thing, right?
It does look like both.
So that is just a delight. I think that's just such a beautiful, beautiful little thing. So it is.
Cute.
It's a derivative plant, and you know what?
I don't think we've ever used that word to describe one of these trees.
I don't think we have.
But it feels very fitting now. It's just like it's just grabbing all these elements that it likes and being like, I'm self-defined.
Yeah.
You're like, I've seen everybody with that haircut.
Yeah. And he's like, okay, well, look at my shoes. Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody wears those shoes.
But not everybody who has that haircut has those shoes.
That's true.
So
yes.
This tree is going from all these different things.
There is a certain amount of self-invention here.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at one point you just have to round up to, you're original. Good job. So this is the thing, though. It is, I'm glad that you used the term derivative. It's a derivative plant. It has done nothing of its own.
Mm.
Because it's got a buddy. And I'm going to say buddy.
Wow.
That also does the same exact thing.
Live a derivative life.
Exactly. And this is getting us one step closer to what I was reading about in this book.
Oh my God, exciting.
This tree, our Falcatifolium taxoides, mm-hmm. has a specific plant that grows only with it. And I mean only with it as in it is a parasite.
Oh.
There is another species of conifer called Parasitaxis usta or yusta.
Wow.
That is no longer able to do anything by itself. It is 100% a obligate parasite of its buddy, Falcatifolium taxoides.
Wow.
This is, to everyone's understanding, the only conifer, nay, the only gymnosperm.
Oh my God.
That is parasitic.
Now, before we go further,
okay.
We all know symbiosis.
Uh-huh.
This is where it's like a mutual kind of benefit thing.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I'll give you a little, you give me a little, we're friends.
Like mycelia, right?
Yeah.
Parasitic means that one of these things is getting everything and the other one is being harmed.
You know, I think that being harmed might be a little too, it might push it a little beyond objectivity.
Sure.
Because we can't really measure that, but we can probably make that assertion.
Okay.
However, we can say that one is taking everything from the other, whether or not the other is strictly being harmed or not.
Okay.
We just know that if you take plant B, if you take what is called the maybe coral pine or corail, and you take that away, it will die.
Okay. Think of like barnacles.
Ooh, no. Barnacles just sit on top of things, but they do all their own work.
Okay.
It's just like English ivies, a similar thing here in the Pacific Northwest.
Uh-huh.
It gets all of its nutrients from the ground. It is not a parasite in any regard.
Okay.
But then mistletoe is a parasite.
So the parasitic conifer here isn't doing any of its own work.
It is not. In fact, for a long time, they didn't even think it could do photosynthesis.
Wow.
In fact, I don't think it technically can, but it has chloroplasts.
It's like the sitcom bully who just takes all of the nebbish characters' homework.
It's not a bully. I think it is less a bully because it doesn't get very big. Like maybe it gets a meter and a half, maybe like 6 feet tall, and that's about it. Every time I've seen a picture or someone looking at it, it's usually been 3 or 4 feet. Like not very giant.
All right.
Yeah. So it looks it's the craziest looking plant because it's a conifer. It makes cones and it grows on New Caledonia, where everything is on this ultramafic, really awful soil, it can grow through that soil, but it sends its roots into the roots and grafts itself on to another tree.
Wow.
There is a one description that a guy found this plant growing like an octopus off the side of another tree and had roots growing up a few feet and then just going into the bark and then going down a couple inches and just going into the bark.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy?
Like that is like face hugger stuff.
Yeah. It's horrifying.
Holy shit.
Like it's truly one of those things where you're like, oh my God, like that sounds like horrific.
Parasitaxis Usta or Usta.
Yes, I would say parasitaxis.
And this is the corail is the common name.
Yes, exactly. So that's the common name. I have also read it as coral pine, which is surely a play on coral root, which is a ericaceous plant that grows parasitically off of fungus, off of trees in our area, actually.
Wow, interesting.
Actually, I think all across North America, maybe even Europe and Asia.
Okay.
But that's why I think it's called that. Otherwise, there's not really a good name, but I do like parasitaxis, which is kind of like means parasitic you. Which is fun. Everything just looks like a U is what we're learning down here.
Yeah, what's going on down there?
Yeah, what's happening, New Caledonia? All you fringe people who went down there? To get back on topic.
Wow.
It is a wildly insane parasite because it does two things. One, it will connect through a fungus. So it will actively parasitize fungus that are working with other trees.
Wow.
It will also actually root graft onto a different species. In fact, it's in a different genus entirely.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as anyone can tell, it only gets onto Falcatifolium taxoides.
Okay.
So they have not found it on other plants, but it has found it on fungus. I have not found that the fungus is on other plants also.
It's like an endemic parasite.
Yeah, an endemic parasite on an endemic tree.
In an endemic island, in an endemic world.
It's insane to think about.
I mean, hey, life is sort of, as far as we know, endemic to Earth.
Hey, that's exactly right. And boy, that just is a good way to keep going on to this, the last step that we're going to have.
Wow.
But before we do, I want to note a couple interesting things about our little parasite.
Okay.
It has bright purplish red foliage.
Yeah.
Like wildly bright purple red where it looks sickly because obviously it's not making its normal green pigment. It's chlorophyll.
Hmm.
So they have chloroplasts. They have found this. This is the case. However, it also allegedly is able to do photosynthesis, but it cannot transfer electrons is the issue.
Hmm.
So essentially, it can make its food, it just can't send it anywhere.
Oh my God.
So it has no longer, I can't figure out exactly if if it is having trouble taking electrons in to do photosynthesis to then create sugars outwards, or if they, in fact, just can't get the electrons away from certain things and move them elsewhere. Like, for whatever reason, they just can't move the electron around.
Some wires are crossed somewhere.
Somewhere, yeah.
It's just not working.
Yeah, exactly. And
holy
it has
shit.
Has xylem, but it doesn't have phloem.
Really?
Yeah. But now this makes sense, doesn't it? Because phloem is what takes photosynthate
right.
from the leaves that are doing the energy, the photosynthesizing sections, uh-huh. out and down to the rest of the thing.
Yeah.
Whereas xylem is what takes things from the roots up, water and dissolved minerals and things. So this has been going on for so long that the tree has essentially, for whatever reason, in some whatever way, completely lost its ability to transport these things from its leaves down. So it's only sucking. It does not does not push anything else.
This is what happens when you rely too much on everyone else. You don't learn to do anything for yourself.
You can't do anything.
You go to college and you realize, holy shit, I've never done laundry. What do I do? So you just let your clothes rot in a big pile.
I think my one of my roommates did that.
I don't think I washed my sheets.
Don't tell us, Alex.
I was 18 years old. Period. I know how to do laundry now.
I don't think I
would
wash my sheets. That's horrifying. I think you're totally right, though.
Yeah. Like,
could you? That is. It's half the reason we know for sure that this is an obligate parasite. Hmm. It doesn't even have the mechanism to pipe things the opposite direction.
Totally.
To even go if it, back to something else.
Even if it wanted to, it couldn't.
Yeah. So you know that it's not giving anything else to its plant buddies.
Holy shit.
There's a fact.
Just a leech.
Yeah, it's literally a leech. Like, it's just to the perfect extent.
Wow.
So this is what this looks like. And it makes these adorable little cones that are just spectacular. The same kind of thing where they have these little red bracts that then pop, look like also podocarps because it's in the podocarpaceae.
Yeah.
But they're a little bit also, they're red, have a little teeny tiny fertile scale with a single inverted ovule. It's just...
Hold on.
It's just great.
I missed something here.
What did you miss?
This parasite is also a podocarp.
It is, yeah.
Okay. I didn't hear that the first time you said it, I don't think.
I don't think I said it first. That was the first time, just right then.
Here's the reveal.
Yeah. So it is the only gymnosperm that is also a parasite. The only one. And this gymnosperm includes ginkgos and cycads and kneetails and all those other weird things that you don't ever think about being gymnosperms, but are.
And all conifers.
And every single conifer.
Wow, Casey.
Yeah, so it's a podocarp, meaning it's in the podocarp family, which again is like Capressaceae. Like, it's just a huge family of really weird, weird, weird trees.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I'm sorry, I know there's someone in the world is like, stop calling my trees weird. You said it three times.
Sure.
Sorry, guys.
I mean, hey, it's all relative,
it's
right?
It's all relative, Alex.
I also think you can, that we've talked about, actually, Casey, really quick.
Please.
We also talked about this when we were talking about the noni fruit.
Yeah.
And we were like, you know, apparently it tastes disgusting. We kind of caught ourselves because we were like, well, there are people who grew up with this in its native habitat.
Yeah.
Thinking that it tastes good. And every time they hear another fucking white man call it disgusting, it's like, oh, come on. You didn't grow up with this. It's not part of your culture. But then we had people reach out to us from Hawaii who were like, no, I grew up here. Trust me. It's gross as fuck. So I think it's okay to, like, there are people who grew up around these plants who also think they're weird.
I think you're totally right.
Okay. Like,
everyone can have their perspective. I grew up around pickles. I still hate pickles.
Fair point.
So it's
probably my least favorite thing about you.
I know. It is the thing I hold with such pride inside my own heart.
Along with using an Android phone.
I love my Android phone, by the way.
If my least favorite thing about you is that you don't like pickles, you're doing all right.
I am. That's a good point. Thanks, Alex. Yeah, I appreciate that. What a compliment.
You got it.
Yeah, we had to get around that, and now we're here. Great. Well, so this is a good thing. I agree with your insistence that everything is relative, because I was reading this book, and the reason that I got shot off into talking about something completely different,
and
going down some other rabbit holes, and thinking, oh, I should look into that, is that in this book, I don't know, like 50 pages in, he makes this assertion about life, almost side-handedly.
Wow.
Because the whole book is about what exactly is life and why did it develop the way it did.
Hmm.
It's just kind of like those big fundamental questions.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Everyone's like, well, I mean, it's just like, it's like this. And he's like, no, further. And so he was talking about viruses and how a virus is considered this like almost non-living parasitic thing.
Yeah.
And when he used the term parasite, he then kind of just, like, I mean, talk about a book that's so heavy that when you do a quick, like, almost like aside, that is also like a gigantic, like, philosophical question to begin with. And he said, well, if you really look into it, everything's in a parasite on its environment anyway. And I was like, hold on.
You can't just drop that.
What exactly is he saying? So he talked about it for like a paragraph because he's like, well, let me tell you kind of what I'm talking about here.
Wow.
And so he said, this is again, Nick Lane, The Vital Question, 50 pages in, where's it going to go after this? I don't know.
Wow.
He made a quick argument that in a certain sense, you can say everything's parasitic to its environment. And including humans. He says, yeah, and this is a little bit visceral, but he was like, yeah, you know, we have to live in an environment that has oxygen and a certain kind of food. And so he's like, yeah, so if you like close us off from the environment, like say putting a plastic bag over your head, you'll die within minutes.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, wow, that's a intense way to describe that, but I suppose it's, you're
pretty
right.
Concise.
Yeah. And so he basically said, he's also, I think where he's going is the environment and the living organism are just two sides to one coin. Mm. Like you'd imagine electromagnetism and or electricity and magnets. That's just two sides to the same thing. We now call it electromagnetism.
Okay.
So space and time. Mm. Einstein brought those together and said, no, these are the same thing, yeah. Just two sides to this. So I think what he is ultimately going to argue at some point is that your environment and the organism that it produces are essentially two sides to the same coin, where if you're thinking about parasitism, then you can say, well, okay, yes, we see this plant is growing off plant A, growing off of plant B. Our parasitaxis is growing off of our falcatifolium.
Yeah.
That one is a parasite of that one.
Sure.
But then he is arguing, well, sure, yeah, because if you take the parasitic plant away from its environment that it is grown to be in, it dies. If you take that tree away from its ultramafic soils on this one particular island,
wow,
it dies.
Interesting.
What's the difference? One is a parasite of another living organism. The other is a parasite of the environment, which, if you really think about it, is a whole collection of living and non-living entities all working together and that have been for billions of years.
Mm-hmm.
So my question ultimately, and I'm sorry, how much time have we taken?
I think 4 hours.
Damn. My question is, are all plants just parasites?
Wow, man.
Are we a parasite? Are humans a parasite?
I think we certainly are. Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that.
And you've heard the idea of like humans being a virus.
Yeah.
That theory, which I mean, theory might be a little bit overblown.
It's like a pop psychology sort of table talk sort of thing.
Yeah. So I don't know. What do you think, Alex?
Wow. Oh my gosh. I don't like the humans are a virus, man.
Yeah.
But like, I think that, you know, humans are certainly an invasive species. We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. I would agree that humans are parasitic. You know, what does the potato get out of me ripping it out of the ground and frying it up for French fries?
Very true. Well, if you talk to Michael Pollan, then the potato says, well, I've just made a deal with you. I have made a deal with humans, and now I have more of my genes across this planet than almost everything else other than wheat and corn. Maybe
sure.
Rice, too.
Like, it gets, like, the well, okay, I guess, you know, ultimately, I don't know, Casey, so I'm just going to think out loud.
Oh, please. Yeah.
But you're saying, like, the bird eats the raspberry. It seems like a one-sided thing until the bird shits out the raspberry seeds across the field.
Oh,
right?
Well, not quite. I'm saying if you take anything away from its environment, that it will die.
Sure.
So you could then consider that anything is then a parasite in a strict sense of its environment.
That is some serious next level thought.
Isn't
like,
that wild?
You're
to think?
Right. That's like asking why and then asking, okay, why is that?
Yeah.
And then getting that answer and saying, okay, well, then why is that?
Well, and it kind of puts into perspective the idea of parasitism as like, we always think about it as negative. You know, if we have a parasite inside of our bodies, that's bad. Like, parasites are bad.
Well, how about this, Casey? Like almost everything else, what if it's a spectrum?
Yeah, it's got to be, right?
You know, the parasitaxis is on one side.
Yeah.
That really, I mean, like, gets after that tree, and it is this sickly figure who's just leeching the blood off of this other living thing. Uh-huh. I think that's more personally, I think that is more parasitic.
Yeah.
Than saying, well, if I put a plastic bag over my head, I'm going to die, so I'm a parasite on the earth.
Yeah. Well, see, and I think that it has more to do with the living versus non-living as we humans imagine it.
Mm-hmm.
So we see an environment, as I said, like a mixture of living and non-living things.
Yeah.
Right? But for the most part, the conception has been that soil is essentially non-living. There's soil that is these things over here that a plant grows in. The plant is the living thing. So if the plant is using more or less not living stuff, which again, we all know what soil is. It's a living biome in a huge sense.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like, don't
yeah.
get us wrong here.
Yeah.
But this is kind of the old conception, which I think is what we're dealing with right now in this episode, is the old conception is the soil and rocks and whatever, not living, tree growing out of it, living.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's not a parasite, because a parasite is a living thing taking all of its nutrients and sustenance from another living thing, which is most of the time not a mutual connection. It's not going to be something going back and forth. You're getting a little, I'm getting a little. It's always a one-sided thing. I'm getting everything and you're getting nothing. So parasite would be living off of living. Non-parasite would be living off of non-living.
Okay.
Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Then, now if we change that conception around a little bit and we say, well, okay, but that would make birds, like you just brought up, a parasite of these other animals. Although it goes back and forth a little bit, because it does, like you were saying, there is a little bit of give and take. The plant is getting something. But if you take away the food, those living things that the birds are eating, then the bird is dying.
Sure.
So its environment has changed to the point where it is no longer able to survive. It's a parasite off of those other living things. Soil is a living organism in the grandest sense of like this giant collection of life, which is hard for us to conceptualize, because really it's just billions and billions and billions of individual lives in rocks and soil and all this kind of stuff. So we should consider that also a living thing.
Sure.
Kind of like this idea of Gaia, you know?
Where yeah.
The earth is one big living thing, which I think is probably more and more correct. It's just, you know, we can't scientifically chop it up into easily digestible entities and distinct and discrete things that we can measure and calculate.
Mm-hmm.
So if we change our conception that way, does that kind of build a world for you to imagine where conceivably, yeah. if you take a tree, specifically these trees on New Caledonia, yeah. you take them out of their
this week's tree.
Soil. Yeah. Take this week's tree off of its New Caledonian soil, plant it somewhere else. It will die. It will not survive.
Interesting.
Yeah. It has to grow on these soils.
I think this topic is really interesting. But it is one of those things that I look at and I'm like, I'm cool, shrugging. Cool, man. I'm shrugging.
I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe.
Well, I guess that's fair. That's a fair response. I did just kind of throw it at you. I didn't say, Alex, really quick, look up the philosophical definition of parasitism before this week's episode, would you?
Okay. Here's my, if I have to make a big sweeping judgment in the moment, which is what this podcast is all about.
Guilty. No, Alex. Oh my God.
I think if we're going to call everything a parasite, we should change the word.
Ah,
right?
Yes.
And
okay.
reserve parasite for something else. Or just remove it from...
Yeah, strictly movies from 2019 Korea.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Oh my God. Why did that take me even half a second to understand?
I didn't say it in a way that makes a lot of sense immediately. So, yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah, I think we should just change the word. It's like cohabitation or like, you know...
Oh, yeah.
Some sort of, I don't know.
I think
some
it's...
Some sort of paradigm shift. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. I totally agree, Alex.
Yeah.
I think that this is the sort of thing that perhaps is better served in a way that I think is, I don't know, more spiritual is what probably some people would think.
Yeah.
But I think it's not. I think it is scientific. So maybe I shouldn't say it's not. I think it is, yes, but I think it's scientific, where if we are looking at our strict definitions, the more we are learning about how life actually works and functions, the closer we look, the more those definitions break down. So we can't just easily say, yeah, I mean, it doesn't take, we did this in 15 minutes and we've kind of changed the conception of what a parasite really is.
Yeah.
Or at least we've looked into it. Maybe there's some scientists who are just going to be like, no, 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 you guys are way off.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't think that's the case. I don't think there's anyone who could give us a different definition of parasite that will change its kind of like ramifications if you apply it to these lower, smaller, or bigger levels. But on top of that, Alex, I think that the more that you have to like add like barriers onto a definition, the more complex that definition gets, the less applicable it is to real life. It's the Occam's razor kind of thing.
Interesting.
Where the simpler it is and the wider it applies, the better rule it is. Whereas if it has to be something that's so particular, can you even really call it a rule, or is it not quite there?
This whole like meeting of like science and like the spiritual thing.
Yeah.
It's like when two lightsabers clashing, like they're not going to go through each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I see. But they certainly will be very bright and loud.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what really comes down to is the force behind it, you know.
Wow.
And I'm saying force on purpose there.
That was so good. I think you're right.
Very interesting, Casey. I'm also curious to hear what people think. Go comment somewhere.
Yeah, go comment somewhere.
Yeah.
And tell us what you think. But that it's just I got stuck on that, Alex. I'm still stuck on it, as you can probably tell.
It's very curious. I feel like we could do a whole parasite month and talk about this debate.
I'm sure we could.
It's worth a shot.
It's worth a shot. Anyway, this month, February.
It's content.
It sure is.
Casey, unfortunately, as is our want, we have to reduce this all to a numerical score.
Exactly.
After a quick break, we'll be right back with our review of this week's tree. Alex here. Here's a little something about me. I love to be cozy. Coziness is of utmost importance to me, and I am in a constant search for coziness. And that is why we present to you Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes luxurious bedding and clothing products. And what do I mean by luxurious? Let me tell you this. I now have Cozy Earth sheets on my bed. I wear a full Cozy Earth sweatsuit to bed, and I have been getting the best sleep of my life. It is quite literally the softest material I've ever put on my body, and my skin is so happy in it. I usually have a little bit of a sensory thing. I don't like things touching my skin. Clothes are tough, but with Cozy Earth, I am treated to superior softness, unparalleled fabric, materials, and weave. This is a real endorsement. It's the most comfortable material to ever grace my birthday suit. And guess what? You deserve this coziness too. So treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. And you know what? Completely arbitrary, listeners. A little inside detail here. You all get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. That's TREES for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Now you go and get cozy.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of this week's tree.
Mm-hmm.
Casey, mm-hmm. It's now time for a review of this week's tree.
All right.
Here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on this week's tree and then give it a rating of Casey. As our resident expert, we will begin with you.
Thank you, Alex. I think that this tree is pretty cool. Now, it's not pretty cool in the traditional sense of being pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool in the sense that it's a part of a bigger thing, and perhaps is at the center of a question that is far, far deeper than it even understands.
Wow.
It sits in the spot that I think is fascinating. So I think that give it some credit.
Totally.
It grows on these ultramafic soils. It has a octopus-like face-sucking parasite. although
instant win.
I should say it tends to have roots, or it goes through the soil most of the time. In fact, I'm not sure if I have found any other examples that it was growing the way that person described initially, with it like on the side of the trunk.
I choose to believe Casey.
Oh, me too. I tried to find pictures of it, but he doesn't have any pictures.
Okay.
It would be so cool to see that. I've seen it with like a hemlock growing on the side of another tree where there used to be soil or something.
Yeah.
Ugh, it was the best.
That sounds great.
Okay. So, but I do like the berry. I think of all the podocarps, like I said, the berry looks a little bit more delicious.
Sure.
It doesn't get very big. It kind of stays small. It's very ewish. And it's kind of a fun tree. I think I like more the spot that this tree lies than its actual like, I would say plant more of it, but I don't think you can.
So you like this kind of the mythos around the tree more than you like the tree as a tree.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm going to give it, 6.8. It's just going to get a 6.8. And I want to be like, oh, stop. I respect you. But that's it.
Right.
It's just how it has to be. It's just, this is what I think. And this is how I have to stand with my heart.
6.8.
I do want to eat its cone though. I don't know if it's good. I don't know if I'll get sick, but I want to eat that.
I think you could probably get away with it.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah.
Birds can do it.
I'd send you to New Caledonia.
I would love to go to New Caledonia.
It'd be pretty cool. Okay. This week's tree. I think I'm in agreeance with you, Case, that I like the sort of world building around. This is like a problem I have with a lot of fantasy.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I'll love the world building that the author presents, but then the characters are just like kind of whatever.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I gotcha.
Which is the reason you read a book, right? Like you want to follow along with the characters. And, and I think a lot of science fiction and fantasy writers focus a lot on the cool world they've built and then fill it with the most stock off the shelf character you could ever imagine.
I gotcha.
That's kind of how I'm feeling here. I love this whole debate about the parasitism.
Yeah.
Parasitism?
Yeah. Well, sure. Your emphasis is a little off.
Parasitism.
There you go.
I love that it grows in soil where it makes no sense for plants to grow.
Yeah.
It is this,
just deal with it.
I'm reading A Song of Ice and Fire right now.
What? Again?
More specifically, I'm reading Game of Thrones. I've never read the entire series. So
you haven't?
I'm starting from the very beginning and I'm working my way through the whole thing.
Oh my God. It's going to blow your mind. After book three, you're going to be like, oh my God.
That's as far as I've gotten. So
I'm
excited.
Okay, good. This is great. You're going to like it.
And this New Caledonia sort of reminds me of old Valyria. It's like this almost like mythical place that you know existed. It's in the histories.
Yeah.
But like nothing quite makes sense there. It's like this weird ancient place kind of like full of magic and like myth. And I think that's really cool.
It's beautiful, Alex. I agree entirely.
Although I have something to say about old Valyria that I'm really excited about.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to hear.
You believe I have a girlfriend?
Alex, yes.
So I'm going to give this week's tree like a 5.5.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty lame.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right. I got to pick a tree to get you excited next week.
Hold on.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm chill.
The whole story around it, this whole thing, these orbiting planets.
Yeah.
I'm giving like an 8.7. I love that shit. That's really cool.
Excellent. Okay. This is spectacular.
That was our review of this week's tree, Casey.
It's time to name this tree, Alex. I'm not going to let you get away with it like that.
That's right.
Unless you want to do the question and answer first and then try to do it, but I don't think we should. So, do you have any idea? Do you have anything on your heart?
Not off the top of my head. All no. Right. Do you? Now,
I do, but I've kind of, like I said earlier, I want to call it the Falcon U.
Oh, yeah.
But that doesn't really get us anywhere.
No.
It doesn't help.
It's just a meaningless play on words.
Exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't even mean the same thing.
Right.
And so first thing, this is just so that there is an English name that we can use. There is certainly a name for this plant elsewhere. So we're not trying to say you should not use that. However, it's kind of fun, you know? There's a little empty box on this website needs to be filled.
That's right.
So I kind of like the idea. So it's not a U, it's a podocarp.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a berry. I think we should call it a berry, something berry.
Okay.
Now, it also has these sickle-shaped leaves that are evergreen. So I think that it should be something about the sickle-shaped berry plant.
Wow.
So kind of like the idea of like the sickleberry.
Sickleberry is great.
That's kind of what I was aiming for.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I do really like the idea of calling it the Falcon U. Like, I just think that sounds rad.
Maybe that could be a folk taxonomic name.
Okay, yeah.
And sickleberry is going on the common name register.
Yeah, that's what I think, yeah.
I like it because it kind of sounds like huckleberry, but sickleberry. Like,
yeah.
It's got a good sort of PR.
A little snappy.
Yeah, it's okay. Like, it'll look good on a t-shirt, you know what I mean?
Nice, yeah. All right, we should make t-shirts and say sickleberry.
Love to.
Yeah.
Okay, Case, well, I've got an idea.
All right.
I think mycology people really have it going on.
Okay.
In terms of the common names they're given these mushrooms.
All right, yeah.
Fungi.
So. Uh-huh, okay. I like where you're going so far.
There's all these really cool, funky, like edgy names that they're given these fungus.
Dead man's fingers.
Dead man's fingers is the one off the top of my head. Yep.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
And since this is a U-looking thing, and U's are traditionally associated with death,
okay,
I think we should call it Death's Scythe.
Death's
now,
Scythe.
In the mouth, it's a little clumsy, right? It's like not super roll off the tongue-y.
It's insane.
Death's Scythe. I think we should call it the Death's Scythe.
The Death's Scythe.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Death's Scythe.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. No, I'm with it.
Or Death Sickle. That sounds like popsicle.
Yeah. Oh, this is a death sickle. Oh, can I just get a death sickle? Thanks.
It's lemon flavored.
It's like liquid death.
I think right, death scythe or like, you know, find some like, death in some like local, like the god of death in some local.
Yeah. I see. Gotcha. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. I'm jealous of all these fungus people. Well, Casey, that was our naming of this week's tree.
Spectacular.
It's time for our completely arbitrary AMA. We're going straight to our arbitrary Tremium.
All right. What's going on, everyone?
If you want to ask a question on the podcast, join up on the Tremium. That's arbitrarypod.supercast.com. We got a couple different plans, lots of options, lots of rewards.
It's great. Lots of fun.
Lots of fun.
We're doing a live stream, I think, just the Monday after this.
Yes, just in a few days. Next Monday, we're doing a live stream. So hop on there.
Hop on. It'll be on Monday.
The 29th.
It'll be on Monday, the 29th. It's going to be about 6 o'clock, I think, Pacific time.
That sounds right. Casey, this week we got a question from Brandon Corady.
All right. What's up, Brandon?
Brandon says that they spend their summers in... I'm going to kind of paraphrase a little bit.
Okay.
Spend their summers in Juneau, Alaska. Well, all
I've
right?
heard about this place.
Now, a question comes up often.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon says, since you also live in a temperate rainforest,
well,
I'm wondering if you know whether they, being temperate rainforests, mm-hmm. suffer from fewer invasive species than other types of forests. Mm. And if so, why?
Interesting.
I haven't heard of many up in Juneau, at least, but I'm sure you know more. Thanks and love the show. Thank you, Brandon.
Well, we love you, Brandon. I'm not afraid to say it. Let's see. That's a really good question. So let's see, we're dealing with two different things. One is invasiveness, and the other is a specific ecosystem type, which is this temperate rainforest. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, temperate rainforests are rainforests that are not tropical. They would be up in the higher latitudes or the same latitudes, but down low. It just so happens those places are skinnier. So it's like very, very southern South America and some spaces on New Zealand, that kind of thing, where there's a significant temperature change, where there's very intense seasonality, where it gets cold and warm, but not necessarily like freezing cold to like blistering hot. There's just some intense seasonality over the course of a year, as opposed to a tropical forest where the seasonality is minimized, where the days are basically the same length, the temperatures are always the same. You might get dry seasons versus wet seasons and that kind of thing. But the temperate rainforest is the kind where the temperature swings are pretty insane. So here in the Pacific Northwest, where Juneau is located up in Alaska, there is a very intense winter time, which we're in right now, where you have lower temperatures in the anywhere from the 30s to the 50s maybe, and then very much rain. Whereas in the summertime, rain is way reduced and temperatures go way up. Yeah. All the broadleaf trees come out and everything's really happy and then flips again in fall. So, that ecosystem type is not necessarily unique in the sense of does it get more or less invasive species, because anything that would grow in that kind of forest, this kind of forest, would be adapted to that already. So think things over from England. That's actually a really big issue for species that grow as invasives in the Pacific Northwest. They come from the English Isles, which are famously foggy and cold most of the time, and then nice and warm for a little bit, and then foggy and cold for the rest of the time. So all those plants are really well adapted to a lot of water and temperate conditions where it can get hot and then cool, then hot, then cool. So they are planted over here and they're like, oh yeah, sick, everything's good. Also has similar soil types, similar fungus, that kind of thing. So everything's like more or less equivalent. Whereas if this was a desert, there are plants that are very well attuned to desert life from other deserts in the world. So it has less to do with the actual ecosystem itself, unless, of course, it's New Caledonia, where there's this very particular niche, which is this whole, all the soil, where not everything has grown in that soil, so they can't just come over and be like, yeah, I can take this. That's something that evolves over a long time. But that's because there's only very few of those spots in the whole world. So our forest is not unique. There's plenty of other places that have the same thing. So as long as you can take a plant from elsewhere, bring it over here and plant it, it likely, if it has those characteristics of one other side thing. So if you plant one of those trees over here and it grows, as long as its conditions match where it comes from, probably going to be, it'll at least survive. Whether or not it seeds in, that's the second question. And that really comes down to if it has certain traits, like if it is a generalist species, if it's a species that makes 10,000 seeds and that kind of thing. Those are two big, big ways that trees become invasive. Tree of Heaven, for instance.
Sure.
Generalist. It can do anything.
It and it has the fucking billion seeds on it.
Exactly. So it just does so much. And they're all very fecund, which means they're very likely to be fertile.
Language. Please. Yes,
excuse me. Sorry. So I don't think that the Pacific Northwest, like Juneau, Alaska, or our temperate rainforest is particularly waiting for that to happen. I think it's more of a case that it just so happens that it's really cush conditions. So if you take really cush conditioned plants from elsewhere and bring it over to these new conditions, they're already well adapted to it.
Sure.
But if you bring something from the desert, you bring something from a subtropical region, anywhere else that doesn't quite match up, then it's just going to fail. It's not going to be anything.
This has kind of been interesting to me. And I think maybe I'm missing like a key piece of information or something. Like I would think if something is adapted to live in harsh conditions, uh-huh. if you put it in really cush conditions,
yeah.
it would be like, holy shit, let's fucking go and like grow big and strong and mm-hmm. become like one of those primordial, you know, 3,000 foot trees or whatever.
Yeah.
But the opposite is true, where if you take a cactus mm-hmm. and plant it, you know, out here in the Pacific Northwest forests, not going to do any, it's just going to like shrivel up and die. Right.
Yeah, it doesn't like it.
That's always been interesting to me. And by always, I mean for like the last 20 seconds.
Wow. I've always loved that.
I'm not jumping on a bandwagon.
No, not this time.
It just feels counterintuitive to me.
Yeah.
But it also, the way you describe it, it makes sense.
Yeah. It's just a matter of adaptation, mm-hmm. where if you're just hyper adapted to a certain specific set of characteristics, when you change those, you're just not as well adapted.
Sure.
Could be for a thousand reasons, you know? And I think there are situations that what you're describing does actually happen, where you take a tree that just barely grows one place and then you plant it somewhere else and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
The radiata pine is a perfect example. Its native condition is like a really scraggly tree that doesn't get very big and grows in like four different groves and that's it. Hmm. You plant it somewhere else and you just like give it the opportunity and it just goes ham. And now it's super invasive in other parts of the world, South America, Australia, New Zealand, all these places.
So that does happen.
Yeah, it can for certain.
It's not the
rule. It's the exception.
What is the status quo?
Yeah, it's not the status quo.
Yeah. All right.
So I think that we are just in one environment where it's there, but you go to a different environment, you'll see it just as much.
So to sort of simply answer Brandon's question, not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. There you go.
If you've got a question for us, we just want to support the podcast, get monthly cone stickers, join up on Completely Arbitrary Tremium. That's arbitrarypod.supercast.com.
Right.
Casey, clap.
Alex, we did it. We made it through a
wow
philosophical episode. I don't know what we actually talked about. We could probably give a rating on the little knot tree conifer too, but that would be inappropriate.
I don't think we can quite go that far. No. As we are played out by Milk by the Mini Vandals, Casey, can I tell you the theory on Old Valyria?
Ooh, yeah.
So there was this, Old Valyria is sort of like, I sort of compare it to like Rome, like uh-huh. at its height, right?
Yes, yeah.
The Roman Empire.
Very fair.
And there was, of course, the doom of Valyria,
yes.
which is this cataclysmic event.
Nobody knows exactly what happened.
Totally. Mm-hmm. But if you look at a map of, I forget what the continent is called next to...
Estros?
Essos. There's Essos? Westeros and Essos.
Okay, yeah.
And if you look at the map and you look at Old Valyria, there's this ring of fire around mm-hmm. Old Valyria, which is a volcanic ring, and Old Valyria was kind of built on this volcanic land.
That's the leading theory.
So the theory, of course, is that the doom is just a huge volcanic event that like destroyed everything in Old Valyria.
And it had like Valyrian steel and all these things. Mm-hmm. Like it's super strong, but it's all like there are dragons that live up there. So like it has historically been this wild place, right? Like very magical. And I'm wondering if it has less to do with this volcanic eruption, more to do like with volcanic activity. But also they dug too deep. A little bit like like Unleash the Balrog.
The Cause of Doom. Yeah.
Who knows?
Interesting.
Yeah. So the doom could be like multiple different things.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
That's what I love about those books is like everything's very much magical and curious and dark, but it's all more or less grounded in reality.
Yeah. It's essentially everything's pretty much like, I think that's it. The line that George R.R. walks mm-hmm. is a reasonable line. Like
yeah.
It doesn't go too far into blatant magic.
Totally.
And not too far the other direction either.
There's such, speaking of good fantasy worlds, that's probably my favorite.
Yeah.
Even over Lord of the Rings, probably.
Wow, really?
In terms of world building, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I'm there. I'm there with you.
Well, anyway, I forgot we were recording.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp in Portland, Oregon.
Our cover art is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
If you'd like to support the show, become a Tremium member at arbitrarypod.supercast.com.
Thanks for listening.